Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. As we continue to look back on the year just ending, we'll focus on the local and regional political story with St. Louis Public Radio news team members who were on the story all year. Joe Manis, Jason Rosenbaum, and our Statehouse correspondent, Marshall Griffin. Welcome all. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Good to be here.
Hello.
As the year winds down. Well, anybody want to disagree with me that the election politics was the big, big story of the year? Joe?
I'm not going to disagree with you. I think it was huge. Huge. From Washington to Jeff City.
It was Bigly.
Bigly. You've got it. You've been paying attention, Jason.
Well,
I can
said
tell.
Huge.
And Marshall, you're gearing up for the continuation of the story in a very short period of time.
Yes. The wave of red that swept across Washington, D.C. and Jefferson City about to become official on January 9th when Eric Greitens, Mike Parson, Jay Ashcroft,
Eric Schmidt,
trying not to leave anybody out,
Josh Hawley.
All get sworn in as Missouri's new statewide elected officials, all Republicans. So it'll be interesting. The scaffolding on the south grounds of the Capitol is already on the way up. All the construction equipment from the renovations is gone, so things are actually moving out outside the doorway here.
But Joe has some breaking news.
Yeah, I just got off the call that the Greitens team had laying out the inauguration stuff and the plans. First and foremost, they are breaking a huge tradition in Missouri. There will be no inaugural parade.
No parade.
There's always been one since I've been covering it back since 92. And from what I understand, this goes back 100 years. They've always had a parade. You know, it's like your basic parade where all the office holders are in cars and open, you know, convertibles and drive through Jeff City and the high school bands and all this. One of the reasons they've gotten rid of it, according to Austin Chambers, his chief spokesman who was overseeing the call, is that they said the schedule was so tight, and Greitens is going to do a review of the troops. Now, the governor actually is only oversees the National Guard,
sure.
So I'm not sure if that means the National Guard's going to be lined up on the Capitol grounds, but that's one of the things they're doing instead of. Apparently, they had been looking at actually moving some of the ceremonies to Columbia. That they decided not to. Security is going to be tighter than what often has been for these things, although the ball is still going to be open to the public. And then they also laid out a couple things. Greitens' State of the State address, which is only going to be a week later, which is sooner than normal, won't deal with the budget, which generally the State of the State address always deals with the budget. They're going to wait 30 days and so they can handle a bunch of that. In the meantime, his top priority, which we've written about first and foremost, this first thing he's going to be out of the block is right to work.
Right. Jason, what do you make of this fella? I mean, he's breaking the mold. He seems to be, in any case. He's sort of gone underground for the last month since the election.
Well, to some extent, to most reporters except me.
Yes. Yes.
Because I was invited to walk along with him in North St. Louis a few weeks ago. What do I make of Eric Greitens? Well, I had known Chris Koster for almost a decade, so I knew almost everything there was about the Democratic gubernatorial nominee, right down to the minutiae of his issue positions to his spectacular radio voice. I didn't know Eric Greitens as well because he's a political newcomer that decided to run for governor for his first office last year. We had him on Politically Speaking.
Yeah.
We had him on after he won his primary. So we've actually gotten to spend a decent amount of time with him. And I would say that while his issue positions and the way he expresses this are not super specific, certainly not as specific as Koster, what I've noticed by going to his rallies is he has been able to drum up support from people that typically aren't involved in Missouri politics. I think that there's a genuine aura of excitement from some quarters. If you're a Democrat in Missouri, you're demoralized because he's going to basically be able to do whatever he wants if the legislature agrees with him. And He's definitely different, but I don't think he's necessarily different from other states. I mean, there have been other states that have elected governors who haven't had electoral experience, like Illinois, Michigan, Florida, just recently North Dakota, with varying degrees of success. So I think that there's definitely going to be a lot of expectation around Eric Greitens, but there's also going to be a lot more scrutiny and responsibility now that his party controls everything.
Yeah, because one of the things that they were laying out in the call, for example, because I dealt with them a lot over the last year because I covered a lot of the debates and all that stuff. Aside from Right to Work, which is sort of a peace thing, that because that's what the General Assembly wants, that's what the major Republican donors want. I mean, the donors apparently have been given some promises that certain things will be done the first month. Right to Work is one of them. But Greitens is also going to push for ethics reform as far as the legislature wants to get rid of all lobbyist gifts. And he's also going to propose that if you're in the General Assembly 1 year, you have to wait 1 year before you become a lobbyist. If you're in the General Assembly 8 years, you've got to wait 8 years to become a lobbyist. I got to be frank. I doubt if that'll go anywhere, but that's one of the things they laid out today. He also wants to create some sort of education savings accounts. Well, the state treasurer already has something like that, but that's for higher ed. But apparently they're going to try to propose something so it's similar to maybe some sort of voucher plan.
Well, yeah, there's going to be a big philosophical shift on education policy. One of the things that Governor Nixon was able to block was anything that was deemed quote-unquote school vouchers or school choice or tuition tax credits or whatnot. That roadblock's gone now, and Eric Greitens has expressed that.
But the Missouri Constitution has such strict bans on this stuff, they will end up having to go to the public on some of this.
Marshall, your thoughts about what you've heard so far, and what are you anticipating?
Well, let's first take ethics. You know, there's one thing that everyone said they would like to see happen among some of the reforms, of course, that didn't, was banning all lobbyist gifts. Everyone seems to think that's a great idea, and everyone says they're in favor of it. But if you recall, while it did get through the House, it got nowhere in the Senate because of everyone got caught up on, okay, well, what's a gift? What type of gift are we talking about? Am I going to face an ethics violation if if a lobbyist orders pizza, for a group of visiting school kids, and I happen to walk by and grab a slice of pizza? Am I now in violation? You know, it broke down and bogged down over that type of those types of arguments and concerns expressed. So I don't think that banning lobbyist gifts, even with everyone supposedly on the same page, is going to necessarily be a slam dunk. It might eke out. Perhaps it'll eke out at the final week of session. But I think there's going to be a little more disagreement on some of these issues that everyone seems to be on the same page once they actually get to work.
We're going to have plenty of time to be looking ahead in the days ahead here. Let's spend a little of our time looking back. I think we've established pretty well that the Republicans are firmly in control of what's going to be happening for the next little while. What else are you guys looking at in terms of where the political story took us this year, Joe?
Well, I think the approval of the campaign donation limits is bigger than some people may think. While all sides agree it's a very flawed piece of legislation, and there likely will be, and there already are some court fights over it, most of the fights are not over the limits themselves. It's whether to expand or who gives, that sort of thing. But that will change the climate in Jeff City unless it's wholly tossed out because you've had a handful of donors who've given huge sums. We're talking millions. David Humphreys gave multiple millions in the last 6 weeks after between the election and when the new law went into effect. I think it's going to change things a lot. I think it will make the state parties, I wrote about this last week, a little more consequential because they will have larger limits, and so you'll have more money going into the state parties. But you'll also have all this money going to these third-party groups where nobody will know where it came from. Nobody will really be able – they are not accountable at all. And the state so far has not tried to impose any restrictions on them. And there's some question about how much the state can do by itself. If that's something that Congress has to deal with, then it doesn't look like Congress is going to deal with that. Mm-hmm.
Jason, your thoughts?
The other issue, which Joe and I kind of jostle about occasionally, is the fact that it doesn't include limits on municipal or county committees. Now, I think there's some debate on what that means, but especially if this court case that Joe alluded to throws out this ban on committee-to-committee transfers with some political action committees, it would make it very easy for somebody to open up a committee for mayor, raise $1 million out of there, and then shuttle it to a political action committee. I mean, if that committee-to-committee piece that I mentioned is thrown out, that exact scenario could happen, and candidates could directly raise a lot of money that way. And as Joe alluded to, you can indirectly raise a lot of money through this amendment through third-party committees. I would agree, though, it's a big change. We were an unlimited state for 8 years, and I think that a lot of Republicans and Democrats viewed that as a problem, given the influence that money in politics brings. And we'll have to see if this amendment survives in a form that actually is impactful. I think that's an open question right now.
Marshall, let's talk for a moment about Jay Nixon, who is preparing to leave the governor's mansion and come to University City and practice law. Has he been much heard from in these last few days, few weeks?
If you count press releases, yes. I will tell you this. I think it's a no-brainer. He's going to miss being governor. But I can tell you, he's shown publicly that he's getting a little bit perhaps nostalgic or misty-eyed about leaving. He hasn't always been very easy to talk to or to get time with. You know, he's a lot of times at various press events, he will he's limited times and limited questions. If you're covering a ceremony, he doesn't take questions at ceremonies, only at press conferences, things like that. But in the last 6 months, he's allowed more time for questions pretty much on any topic. He's been more willing to make appearances, like when he came on Politically Speaking not too long ago. He's been more available for things like that, and I think it's because he's maybe getting a little nostalgic about his time in office, and he's going to miss it. I think he's trying to make sure that he's going to be remembered after he leaves office.
I think another thing perhaps he's going to miss is not being a part of the national picture, because that was something a lot of people were talking about had Hillary Clinton won the election. I know both of you guys want to pick up on this part of it, but I have to take a break. Let's do that. And then we'll continue our discussion of the political year just ending with Joe Manish, Jason Rosenbaum, and Marshall Griffin. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Joe Manish, Jason Rosenbaum, and Marshall Griffin. I know both of you wanted to pick up on the subject of Jay Nixon. Jason, you spoke to him recently and took a look at his legacy, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And not only do I think the governor is getting nostalgic, I think I'm getting nostalgic. Joe might be getting nostalgic because throughout his 8 years in governor, I went through a bunch of job changes, moved to St. Louis, got married, had my son born, and went through a whole bunch of life events during his
tenure. What did he have to do with all of that?
Nothing. But I can always just say that during the Jay Nixon era, all those things happened, as with any passage of time. Now, look, I agree that after press conferences, he's become a lot more talkative. I think he's becoming less talking points heavy now that he's out the door and he doesn't have elections to go to. And I don't think his legacy is insignificant, even though he wasn't successful at passing a lot of legislation that he strongly supported, like Medicaid expansion, because in the end, a lot of state government will have his mark on it long after he's gone. He appointed lots and lots of judges, including to the Missouri Supreme Court. He appointed the state auditor, and there were some economic development related projects that he was able to shepherd through the legislature. There was a whole bunch of things that didn't happen that he wanted. And I think his legacy will be linked to Ferguson for the rest of his life. And it's not a positive one, even though his reaction to natural disasters is generally well received.
He was a standout in the Joplin situation, no question.
Yeah, I think some of it will depend on whatever happens, what Jeff City, what they do is regarding Ferguson in the future. One of the things about Nixon is that Nixon has been in state government or in some capacity since the 80s. I mean, I first covered him in 1988 when he made his first bid for the U.S. Senate against Jack Danforth. I remember him canoeing down the Merrimack, and because his big issue at that time was environmental stuff. And when you think about it, I mean, because he was attorney general for 16 years, then he's governor for 8 years. That's 24 years in statewide office. That it will be a long time, I think, before Missouri sees somebody who holds statewide offices like that for so long altogether. So whether, regardless of his strength or weaknesses, the fact is that Nixon has been a fixture in Jefferson City for a long, long time. And that's something that you won't see duplicated for a while, because one of the other major fixtures, Peter Kinder, the lieutenant governor, is a Republican who we recently interviewed. He also is somebody who's been there for a couple decades. So when you think about it, some of the major figures who've really had an impact on Jefferson City for good or bad, for state government, good or bad, for the last over 20 years are going to be gone. And so almost virtually all of the new players that are going to hold statewide office, with the exception of Lieutenant Governor Mike Parson, are new. And it's going to be a whole different climate. People are going to have a whole different set of priorities. And I think the public, it's going to be interesting what happens.
Marshall, so all of what's happened this past year is certainly changing your world.
Oh, yes. I think the big thing here among those of us who cover the Capitol regularly is just how much things are going to be different. We know they're going to be different. I don't think we're exactly sure how it's going to feel or how it's going to play out, but we know with things happening. I think the one thing that we know for sure is that that things will probably move faster, as we talked about earlier, right to work coming up very soon. I would imagine I could actually see that getting sent to the Senate before the end of January. There will be some things and some factions that might develop among some Republicans, but that's the big thing that we're all seeing here is like how things will move differently, you know, compared to when you had a House and a Senate that occasionally struggled with each other, and waiting to hear something from Governor Nixon, who wouldn't speak on their actions until it got sent to him, and then he would loudly complain about them and say, "Don't think I can sign this." That type of modus operandi will be gone.
I'd like to change topics just a little bit here as time marches on. Another of the stories that got a lot of attention this year was the election in the city of St. Louis for the 78th legislative district, the absentee ballot issue. Another biggie that's likely to have some ongoing ramifications, don't you think?
I would say so. I wouldn't be surprised if the Bruce Franks Penny Hubbard saga caused the legislature to change the laws related to absentee balloting. But just the fact that Bruce Franks was able to win in the dramatic fashion that he was able to win, I think might mark a change in St. Louis politics for a while. It's not necessarily that the faction that he belongs to, which generally is more progressive or liberal or aligned with Bernie Sanders, is going to win at everything. But especially with St. Louis Mayor Francis Slay leaving, I think you're going to see a whole new generation of politicians from all sorts of factions start to take state legislative seats and city-based seats over the next couple of years. And we're going to really see kind of a decrease in the old guard. And I think Bruce Franks' win is kind of an example of that occurring.
I'm not sure how much change will really be made in absentee balloting for good or bad. I mean, St. Louis has seen these. I've talked about this before. There were people sent to prison in the early 80s over stuff like this, falsifying absentee ballots. The General Assembly always looks at it, but they often don't do much because many of the same procedures that have been faulted in the city of St. Louis are also used in rural Missouri. I mean, not that there is fraud, but the point is that people rely on the absentee ballots actually heavily in rural Missouri. So I'm not sure how much is going to be done. But I think and it Greitens, when they were laying out some of his priorities today, they didn't mention that. I mean, they mentioned, you know, getting rid of tax credits and doing some other things, but not that.
What do you think, Marshall? Is the absentee ballot issue likely to get some play down there?
It'll get some play. Whether or not it actually makes it to Greitens' desk will remain to be seen. But My guess is anything that would be harmful to rural Missouri voters probably doesn't have much of a chance of getting out. And keep in mind that the new president of the Senate, Lieutenant Governor Mike Parson, passed January 9th, will have some influence on various pieces of legislation. And he's already said that agriculture will be one of his top priorities. Not that that's directly related to voting, but anything that would be of harm to rural Missouri is going to have a very tough time getting out of the legislature.
Did you want to say something, Joe?
Yeah, because I think one of the things that the public St. Louis area, for several years, until the last couple of years, St. Louis actually had an unusual amount of influence in General Assembly because you had St. Louisans who held key positions, including Speaker of the House. Now it's changed, where virtually everybody, especially the Republican leaders, they're all pretty much rural. And I mean, the Speaker is from Poplar Bluff, so it's not quite so rural. But still, the point is that outstate is going to be wielding its muscles. And I think St. Louis and Kansas City may have some struggles to get anything done the next few years that they want.
Yeah. While we're on the subject of change, and we should just certainly mention this because it all actually unfolded this year, it's already been mentioned Mayor Francis Slay is stepping down. He'll go on to something else. We don't know exactly what. Jennifer Joyce is also not running. So there's some, and of course the Hubbard influence has been greatly diminished. I would think as a result
for
of
now
what went on in the.
If you recall, back in 2008, after Rodney Hubbard Jr. lost his Senate race, the next election cycle, the Hubbards did very well. So I'm not writing them off in the slightest. But continue, Don.
Well, that's basically where I wanted to go. Was just mention these things that. Change is not only at the state level, it's very much part of the local picture as
well.
Oh,
yeah. You've got a lot of fresh faces running for mayor, and you've got a few legislative veterans, too. But the point being that there is going to be change. And I think when you think about it, you're having a dramatic change in Jeff City, dramatic change in St. Louis, and, of course, dramatic change in Washington, D.C., all within just a few months. So I think the public needs to be geared up for that, for the better or worse. But there's going to be change.
What other issues, when you look back, stand out amongst you, Joe?
Well, all the money that was spent on the tobacco tax proposals, I mean, huge amounts. R.J. Reynolds was heavily involved. I won't get into the details of it, but the bottom line is there was all this money spent. It was the same result. Got killed. And that's the fourth time since 2002. So while the state of Missouri does have the lowest tobacco tax in the country, one of the lowest gasoline taxes in the country, has transportation needs, it's unclear if that's going to be, any of that's going to be addressed, at least in the short term. And so they're going to have to either look elsewhere to either find the money or cut spending.
Marshall, is that going to be an issue?
I don't think it'll be a huge issue as far as I don't see a. There's not going to be any successful pushes to raise any type of tax or even user fee, which often gets labeled as a tax as well. There was a very public, a very strong push from the Senate to raise the fuel tax that went nowhere in the House and died during the final week. With the Republican numbers staying strong in both the House and the Senate, Republican governor, Republican statewide office holders, you're not going to see much of a push to raise any type of tax, whether it's tobacco or the fuel tax.
Jason, when you look back, what else do you see?
Well, after my last appearance on the show where I made a memorable rant about sports journalism, I would be remiss to not talk about the Rams leaving. And even though the Rams departure is mainly a sports story, it was intertwined with politics pretty deeply throughout 2015. And we saw a shift among public officials who were supportive of building a riverfront stadium from saying the NFL is super important to St. Louis and will be a second-tier city without it, to after the owners voted in early January for the Rams to leave Los Angeles, everyone who made that same argument seems to hate the NFL now. So I don't know if that was related to the relocation vote not going their way. But the NFL is gone, and now that they're in the late months of this year, there's a push for an MLS stadium that is being tangled up in politics as well. So I guess my strange journey through the world of sports journalism will continue next year.
This whole soccer thing is going to be a big issue in the weeks ahead, Joe.
Yeah, and well, Greitens spokesman reemphasized today that Greitens is against any sort of tax credits for it, and he is putting his stamp on this. So, which this could affect what happens. So, yeah, I think there's a very different tenor.
Yeah, and
of what's going on?
And Greitens' position on this is not new. He came out pretty strongly
Correct.
Against the Rams stadium. I guess people who were surprised by the soccer stadium stance didn't see his statement on the Rams.
Well,
situation.
They weren't paying attention, which yeah. often happens. You know, mm-hmm. where the public gets caught up in. I mean, because they have regular lives,
yeah.
so they don't get caught up in the minutia of what many of these candidates actually say. Yeah. And when they get elected and they decide to stick with what they said. Many times the public is like, what?
Well
they said it.
There was no Greitens ambiguity on Greitens' statement on this. I guess people just weren't paying attention.
Correct.
Marshall, shall we just assume that the legislature is just going to fall in line behind Greitens? I mean, he is a newcomer. I wonder if we are making too much of an assumption here that anything he wants he's going to get.
Well, I think he'll probably get a lot of what he wants, but he's not going to get everything. And you know, let's not forget as well that he talked a lot about you know the dirty politics that exists in Jefferson City and that it needed to be cleaned up as you know not just Washington but Jefferson City as well. He stepped on some toes that belong to Republicans as well. I'm sure that some of the hurt feelings might have been mended by now, but. It's not going to be clear, smooth sailing. There will be a few rough waters here and there. There will be, you know, like for example, let's say Senator Rob Schaff, who has often perturbed fellow Republicans. You know, there will be a few people among the Republican Party that might just make things a little interesting for the new governor. But as far as things along the lines of stadiums and tax proposals, I think that they'll probably all pretty much see eye to eye there. So we can rest assured that we will never utter the words San Diego or St. Louis Chargers anytime in the near future or anything else along those lines.
All right, Jason, do you want to get a comment in and then Joe?
Yeah, there has never been a Republican governor who has come into office with more Republicans in the General Assembly than Eric Greitens. So if the two entities agree on something, it's going to pass. Now, whether it gets through the courts for various things, that's another question. But Greitens has pretty much an unprecedented opportunity to get many aspects of his agenda passed if the legislature agrees with them. We talked about on ethics, there's probably going to be a difference of opinion there. And I think that there's going to be a big pushback if Greitens wants to curtail historic preservation or low-income tax credits because they have bipartisan support within the legislature. And Governor Nixon also wanted to curb those incentives, and he was unsuccessful. But any other thing that where there's kind of a harmony between the two, he's going to be able to do. And you couldn't say that during the Matt Blunt era because the margins were a lot slimmer back from 2005 to 2009.
Joe?
Yeah, well, one of the things – The exception, Greitens is the glaring exception to what I mentioned before, but the loss of urban influence, among other things that voters may not have been paying attention to, Greitens lives in the city of St. Louis. I mean, he's going to be moving to the governor's mansion in a few weeks, but he does, and he grew up in St. Louis County, so he does have an understanding of urban and suburban issues. So from that standpoint, that also will set him apart from all these Republican legislative leaders who are not urban, as I just mentioned. So that the rural-urban divide, which often has been a ruling factor in Missouri politics, actually could manifest itself after the honeymoon period where everybody is all together on a few things.
Yes.
We have to wrap this up, but I did want to make mention of one event this year that we should acknowledge, and that is the passing of Phyllis Schlafly, an icon, a conservative icon here in this part of the country, and a national political icon, we should say. Any thoughts about that? We'll quickly wrap it up with that. Joe, Jason?
Yeah, I think it will have a dramatic effect. I'm not going to say too much right now, but I think that her passing, she was such a major conservative figure. The Eagle Forum was a major political force. There's still, you know, all these court fights and all this stuff going on that probably curtailed some of its influence. But again, this is yet another example of an icon or somebody, a longtime veteran, leaving the scene. And then you have newcomers filling the void. And I mean, that's just an example of several that we've seen over this year.
More change.
Correct.
Big year for change. Jason, a thought
I do think we're going to look back at 2016 and realize it was a watershed moment in the Show Me State's political history. I think 2008, 2004, 1992, 1980 were all kind of those points where you saw a change in party and the state governmental leadership. But I think 2016 may top it all, because I don't think we've ever seen Republicans do as well than in this year. And we may never again. We'll have to see.
Quick thought from you, Marsha, before we wrap up.
One thing that hasn't been mentioned yet is how the Republicans and the State House and Senate will take on national issues like the pushback against gun control measures from Washington D.C. and federal regulations. We might see a lot more of that coming up in 2017, not just with the Republican governor, but with an incoming Republican president.
All right. I want to thank you all so much for being with us a very fast 40 minutes or so.
Thank you.
Joe Manis, Jason Rosenbaum, and Marshall Griffin, thank you, and Happy New Year to all of you.
Happy New Year.
Before then. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.